Hello, everyone. So this is a short essay that began this semester in Matthew Gulish's System of Writing. And it started as a response to Gertrude Stein's Tender Buttons. And the title is, A Stein That is a Drinking Glass. Drinking on a Sunday afternoon while reading Gertrude Stein is a system unto itself. Outside, it is a beautiful day. The sun, which for months has been hidden behind wintered clouds, is back again and streaming through my front windows. I am reading Tender Buttons for the third time, or rather, attempting to read Tender Buttons for the third time. It's been my recurring graduate school text, read in three separate seminars, prose poetry, 20th century poetry, systems of writing. The building across the street is having its facade rebricked. They've been waiting all winter, and now that the sun is finally out and the wind has lost its bite, it's time to take action. I see them unraveling tarp and unloading bags of grout from wheelbarrows. I enjoy Tender Buttons, but truthfully, my mind wanders when I read it. This is a shameful confession. All through my schooling, I've been trained to pay close attention to words, but Tender Buttons thwarts me. I'm more inclined to flip through the pages and skim instead of read. I get to lines like, sugar is not a vegetable, and I can't help but think that sweet potato soup might be good for dinner tonight. They drop a pile of bricks outside and the sound rattles my windows. I will make a martini. Dry, no olives. Stiff and not sweet. One shot of gin, a dash of vermouth, shaken over ice, not stirred. In honor of spring and Gertrude Stein, I get a little crazy and add a dash of lime syrup. Lime pairs well with gin. Something about the sour taste mixing with the pine cone scent pleases the senses and reminds me of Christmas. I have a gallon bottle of Beefeater gin, circa 1972. Decades ago, my grandfather owned a liquor store, and to this day we still discover leftover stock in my grandmother's basement. Venturing down the steep, brown-carpeted steps is like an archaeological expedition. The smell of damp is embedded in the walls, and doorways shoot off in all directions that eventually wind back into each other. The liquor bottles reside like gold idols inside a concrete room with calcium stains spotting the ceiling. My proudest find was a porcelain bottle shaped like Elvis, filled with whiskey just like the real Elvis. Not everything is potable. The apricot liquor tasted more like vinegar. But nothing, not even the passing of nearly four decades, can sour gin. When I am truly, deeply stuck and frustrated with my writing, for example, 3 hours on the same dysfunctional paragraph, it's a good idea to walk away. What walking away entails depends on the time of day. Tuesday at 10 in the morning means a cup of coffee. Sunday at 3 in the afternoon means a gin martini, dry, no olives. Although one drink can loosen you up, exercising restraint is key. I am no Faulkner. Writing while intoxicated won't do, as the story of the small-toothed sawfish, co-written one drunk Saturday night while I was an undergrad, proves. I take the martini back to my chair by the window and pick up Tender Buttons again. I never bothered purchasing a copy. Instead, I printed it offline on 8.5 by 11 paper. It feels like I'm reading a 37-page workshop manuscript, and this doesn't bode well for Stein. My instinct is to make notes in the margins. Gertrude, I agree that a period is solemn, but perhaps you could elaborate on that for us. Do you mean a punctuation period or a period of time? A stream of light from the window warms my legs. The workers outside take a break, and reggaeton melodies distract me even more, but I push on. I persevere. I keep reading. Color is in coal. Coal is outlasting, roasting, and a spoonful. A whole spoon that is not full is spilling. Coal, any coal, is copper. I start thinking of 1970s pornos, where martinis are poured and muffled synthesizers help ease actors wearing short-hem smoking jackets into a scene. No one has sex like that, and no one should read like that either. But sometimes there's no shame in needing a little help. My martini is fast dwindling. It would be easy to toss off Tender Buttons as unreadable. There's no story. And isn't that the point of reading for most readers, to uncover a story? I will make a dirty confession. I love stories. I adore witnessing Beatrice and Benedict gradually fall in love through their banter and their insults. I was heartbroken by the image of Stevens sitting on the pier after his short, life-changing reunion with Miss Kenton. And I was secretly excited when Grenouille created his masterpiece perfume from the body of the beautiful Lore. But there are no identifiable characters in Tender Buttons. No narrative arc, no plot line that would help me convince a friend to read it. However, I'm feeling open to new things. The gin is entering my bloodstream, so let's do something we wouldn't ordinarily do without alcohol. Let's eschew story and just go for the pleasure of words. Roll them around on our tongues like a good martini. Chicken. Alas, a dirty word. Alas, a dirty third. Alas, a dirty third. Alas, a dirty bird. When you finally get to that last clause, the dirty bird your vocal cords have been aching to say, you should cheer. That delay is like an orgasm. The words build and build, your vocal cords tense, and your tongue seems to fill the entire cavity of your mouth, and then release, you dirty bird. I would venture to say Tender Buttons is completely readable, just not silently. Although it tests my concentration in a quiet room, it is ironically one of the texts I enjoy reading out loud the most. Just listen to the beginning. A carafe that is a blind glass. A kind in glass and a cousin. A spectacle and nothing strange. A single hurt color and an arrangement in a system to pointing. All this and not ordinary, not unordered and not resembling. The difference is spreading. The first time I was assigned Tender Buttons, and I say assigned unabashedly because I probably would have never picked it up on my own, I read parts of it out loud because I thought hearing it would help create sense. Sort of like reading aloud medieval morality plays or Chaucer's Parliament of Fowls. The words are orally discovered within the non-standard spellings of Middle English. Reading Stein out loud does not help in the same way. But there does seem to be deeper truths hidden in lines like hope in gates, hope in spoons, hope in doors, hope in tables, no hope in daintiness and determination, hope in dates. But more surprisingly, Tender Buttons is funny. Not laugh out loud funny, more of a smirk on the train until the other passengers move away from you funny, but funny nonetheless. Take lines like sausages in between a glass. It's hilarious. Probably because I'm a little drunk at this point. Yes, the martini is finished. But there are obvious phallic connotations to sausages, which Stein was probably quite aware of, and I have a rather juvenile sense of humor. Wait, not juvenile, earthy. It is now late afternoon. The workers have picked up their radio and retired for the day, leaving unused bricks and bags of grout exhausted by the sidewalk. I, too, am done for the day. The corners of these 37 pages are beginning to curl, and the ink is running where I spilled a drop of gin. As Stein wrote in the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, I say that you cannot tell what a picture really is or what an object really is until you dust it every day, and you cannot tell what a book is until you type it or proofread it. Of course, Tender Buttons needs no proofreading, but perhaps reading a book out loud is another way to tell what it is. And by writing, by creating a small reflection on one afternoon, I can discover my own avenue of understanding. My west-facing apartment opens to the setting sun, and rays of light gleam off the empty martini glass, which seems, to me, to wink. Thank you.